So today's class is about estimating, comparing and combining classifiers. So the objectives are to introduce methods of bagging and boosting, cross-validation, and perhaps we will finish ML model comparison today, not Bayesian, and combining classifiers will be done next class. Okay. Previously, we addressed the use of resampling in estimating statistics such as parameters of models. Do you remember how bootstrapping was done? Was that covered, bootstrapping? Do you remember this word, bootstrap? It wasn't covered? Oh, okay. Yeah, I think we must have talked something about bootstrap for estimation of models. The basic idea of bootstrap is this. Let us take an example of, you want to find the mean height of all the people, all the students in the university. But we can't get the data for all the students in the university. So, what you can do is take about, say, 100 students, ask for volunteers to come, and then you can measure the height. You say, you get about 20 volunteers. So you've got the height of 20 students. But with that, you are supposed to estimate the mean of the students in the university, the height. So if among this 20, there are a few outliers, say two or three outliers who are extremely, say, tall. In that case, then the overall mean that you get out of 20 students would be a gross overestimate of the true mean. So one of the ways you can alleviate this is using bootstrap method. So in this method, what you do is you still have n equals 20, but we take several such samples with replacement. That is, you draw samples from the same database with replacement. So you've got 20 samples, 20 heights. You take 20 samples from this database. You take the first sample, say let it be the first height. Then you take the second sample, which is the fifth height. Then you take the third sample, which is again the first height. That's because you have said resampling with replacement. So when you do this bootstrapping, there may be some heights which are repeated again. But at the end, you may also have neglected some of the heights because you just have only 20 heights. So you're again taking 20 heights by resampling. Some will be repeated, some will be missed out. So now we've got one such sample that is of 20 heights. You can do this process all over again, and you can get, say, about 10 times the number of training sets. Initially, you just had about one set of 20 heights. Now we have 10 such sets, and you can perform parameter estimation with each training set independently and then aggregate them all. That's what you must have done in bootstrap method for estimating statistics. In this lecture, we are going to consider resampling methods that can be used directly in the process of training a classifier. The general term arcing, which is abbreviation for adaptive, reweighting, and combining, refers to a class of methods that deal with reusing for selecting data in order to improve classification. This term arcing would include bagging, which we are going to talk about in the slide, and boosting, and ADA boost, which we'll talk in the next few slides. The actual meaning of arcing will become clear once we cover what bagging is and what boosting is. Bagging, or bootstrap aggregation, so it's B for bootstrap and AGG for aggregation. Bagging or bootstrap aggregation uses multiple versions of the training set, each created by drawing n prime less than or equal to n samples from D with replacement. So the basic idea is still the same as bootstrap. So you have an initial set of samples. Like in our example, we had 20 heights, and we keep resampling from this 20 heights to get a new sample of n prime samples, a new database. You keep repeating this several times to get several training databases. And with each set, we can train a classifier. Instead of in the previous lectures, I must have talked about estimating statistics after resampling. In this case, with each resample set, we train a classifier, and the final decision is based on a vote of each component of the classifier. Typically, the component classifiers are of the same general form. So if you're having a ML classifier, that's maximum likelihood classifier, most probably for each of the sets that you use, it will still be ML classifier. A classifier or learning algorithm is considered unstable if small changes in the training data lead to large changes in accuracy. Something like the mean of heights in our example is sort of reasonably stable. If you have a few outliers, it will still be averaged out to some extent by the rest of the heights. If there are a few heights which are exceptionally large, it will still be averaged out by people who are short. So overall it will be okay. It's not so bad. But it's still possible that it's unstable. In that case, something like bagging would average out these outliers and lead to better stability. So bagging is especially used when there are outliers or you think your classifier might be unstable. So one specific example, like I said, mean is not so unstable, but decision trees, for example, can be unstable. Did we talk about decision trees before? Okay, yeah. So when you estimate decision trees and use it for classification, they can sometimes be unstable. So bagging is especially used where decision trees are used. So you form several decision trees using this bagging approach, and then you aggregate them for getting a better, more stable classifier. So bagging in general improves stability because it effectively averages out such anomalous behavior by pooling classifiers. The voting algorithm can be simple, such as a majority vote. So in this case, we have, say, 10 training data sets, that is, 10 bootstrap sets. With each bootstrap set, you're going to have a classifier. So given a test set, you will have results, the classifier output from the first classifier, the output from the second classifier, and so on till, say, 10 classifiers. The final classification will be based upon voting. For the first test sample, if class 2 was selected most number of times, that will be selected as the correct class. So that is majority voting. Or we will define, we'll see one example of a more sophisticated statistical method for voting algorithm. So this is bagging. Did you get what bagging is, basically? Boosting is also similar to bagging. It's for improving the accuracy of a learning algorithm by forming an ensemble of component classifiers. Bagging, boosting, all these methods. The basic idea is you've got a somewhat weak classifier, which is supposed to have at least an accuracy of accuracy greater than 50% for a two-class classifier. That is, it should at least do better than random guess. So if it's just about better than a random guess, it's called a weak classifier. It's bagging and boosting are especially useful in such cases. Using combination of repeated classification using such weak classifiers, we can get reasonably good performance. So in boosting, this is just one example of how we can go with boosting. Consider creating a three-component classifier for a two-category problem. Randomly select a set of n1 less than n patterns. N is the total number of patterns, So randomly select a set of N1 patterns called D1 from the full training set. Train a classifier C1 on this set. So note for boosting, as I said, for boosting to provide a significant benefit, C1 need only be a weak learner, which means it has an accuracy slightly greater than chance, which is 50% for a 2-class case. Now, so first we have created the first classifier C1 with this database D1. Now create a training set D2 that is most informative given component classifier C1. So what actually most informative is what determines the flavor of boosting. We'll see one flavor of boosting called AdaBoost in the next slide. So most informative, it's somewhat subjective to what you mean by most informative, but somehow assume we can generate another database D2 and create second classifier C2 on this new dataset D2. One way of defining most informative is at least half the pattern should be correctly classified by C1, but not too many more should be than half should be too much more than half should be classified correctly by C1. Now search the remaining N1 patterns for this data. That is, N1 patterns are already being used by classifier D1 in using database D1. Now, so for D2, take the rest of the patterns that was not used for classifier C1 and search for the most informative data among this. Now, you can go on to build a third classifier by similarly training on a third data set D3. So choose patterns for which C1 and C2 disagree. Final classification can be performed using a majority vote of C1, C2 and C3. The benefits are high performance, that is, as I said, we can start off with a classifier which is barely better than a chance classifier. But the drawbacks are computationally expensive. This can be computationally quite expensive. Issues, size of the partitions, initial guess N1 equals N2 equals N3 is NO3. In this case, N1, N2, N3 are the size of the databases for each classifier. AdaBoost will actually make the next slide. This is one flavor of boosting algorithm. This will make the concept of boosting more clear, actually. AdaBoost is a short form for adaptive boosting. It's a popular variant on boosting that allows the designer to continue adding weak learners until some desired performance criterion is met. Each training pattern receives a weight that determines its probability of being selected for a training set for an individual component classifier. So, we have got a database and we have got one classifier, say maximum likelihood method, and we do this classification using this training set. Now, at the end, when you try to classify using this classifier, it will be able to correctly determine the class for some of the data set, some part of the data set. The remaining will be misclassified. Defining the data set for the second classifier, in AdaBoost, what is done is all the database is again used, but each and every data sample is weighted differently. Those data samples that were incorrectly identified at the end of the first classifier will be weighted more. Did you get this idea? The basic idea is the first classifier might not correctly classify some of the samples. So what we try to do is use another classifier to especially model these incorrectly classified data set better. That is done by using weight. Initialize the weights of the training patterns to be equal initially. This uninformative prior. This even before the first classifier is used. If the training pattern is accurately classified, then that pattern's chance of being used again is decreased. So we've got the first classifier. If the training pattern is accurately classified by the first classifier, then reduce its weight. Reduce the data sample's weight so that it's not so much used by the subsequent classifiers so much. On iteration K, so you're going to have several iterations of this. On iteration K, draw a training set at random according to the current training data weight distribution. Train classifier CK and increase weights of patterns misclassified by CK, or equivalently decrease the weights for correctly classified patterns. So even here we can use for final classification, we can use a vote-based approach. So now we have got, say, five classifiers. The first classifier uses all the data with equal weights. The second classifier will use all the data, but with weights depend upon how much were misclassified, what data were misclassified in the first classifier. For the third classifier, it will depend upon the first two classifiers' misclassification rates, and so on. We can use, again, for the final classification, a vote-based approach based on all these classifiers, or we can go for a discriminant-based function like this. So g of x, this is the final classification, is sum of 1 to k max. K max is the total number of classifiers of alpha k hk of x, where hk of x is the output of classifier k for data x, and alpha k is the weight for the classifier k. And one way of defining it, this is a very commonly used weight, is alpha k is half log of 1 minus ck over ek. You can see the intuition behind why they are using this. It's because if the error for classifier is very low, say almost zero, then in that case we would want that classifier to have a lot of weight, because the classifier is already performing very well. It's able to classify data pretty well because the error rate is so low. If the error rate is so low, then we would want to weight that particular alpha very high. So 1 minus ek would be quite low. I mean, 1 minus ek over ek would be quite low. And logarithm of that is for, if it's extremely low, you wouldn't want it to go to infinity. So this is to sort of normalize it to a reasonable numerical range. And this one example of how ensemble learning is useful, especially this ADA boost, this shows good performance in this. So in this you can see this is the weak learner weighted training error. So this is the performance of weak learner, and this is the ensemble learner using ADA boost. So this ensemble over the training data, and over test it will obviously perform a little worse than the train, but it's still much better compared to the weak learner in isolation. So this ADA boost. Now what we saw in boost is actually a special case of ADA boost, because in this what we are doing is we are using the data that was not seen in the previous classifiers. When you saw for the second classifier, we took data from data that was not seen in D1, data that was not used for first classifier. In ADA boost, what we will do is we will use all the classifiers but weight them depending upon how well they were classified. So boosting that we saw in the previous slide is a special case of ADA boost with weights 1 or 0 depending upon whether you're using ADA boost or boost. Learning with queries. So in the previous sections we assumed a set of labeled training patterns and employ resampling methods to improve classification. So that's what we have been doing all along this course, is we assume that we had a training set where we had the data and the label corresponding to which class the training set belonged to. But in a lot of practical cases, having a large database with correctly labeled data is quite expensive. Or you may not be able to do it for a very large database. Maybe you can just do it for a small database where you can go and manually label which class each training set came from. In speech, people do manual transcription. That is, they will listen to recorded sounds. They will sit and actually say, okay, this segment of the speech is this phoneme or this word. So this is transcription. They will sit and do that, but it's obviously expensive because you have to pay the transcriber quite a sum to do this transcription work. But obviously there's quite a lot of speech database considering the amount of talk over cell phones and what goes on the internet. So if we can use all this data but without actually doing transcription, we can get a lot more leverage. So one of the ways of knowing how much, what data exactly to transcribe, instead of transcribing all the data, we can transcribe data selectively. One of the ways of doing it is learning with queries, which sort of intelligently tries to guess which data is needs to be transcribed and tries to minimize the amount of data that needs to be transcribed. So when no labels are available or the cost of generating truth mark data is high, how can we decide what is the next best pattern or patterns to be truth marked and added to the training database? The solution to this problem goes by many names, including active learning, which is maximizing the impact of each new data point, and cost-based learning, and simultaneously minimizing classifier error rate and data collection cost. Two heuristic approaches to learning with queries are confidence-based. Select a data point for which the two largest discriminant functions have nearly the same value. So in this case, what you do is you would initially have a small data set which is already transcribed. That is, you have samples from class 1, samples from class 2. So which means you already have the labeled data set. Now you train the classifier. Now, this would, if the data set, initial data set is somewhat small, this will only give you an approximate margin or approximate decision surface. So there may be points which are close to this decision surface which you cannot classify reliably. So for these data points, the confidence of your classification will be very low, because initially you don't start with a very big training data set. So you ask the transcriber to give transcription only for these data sets which have low confidence. That is, select a data point for which two largest discriminant functions have nearly the same value, which means they have the least confidence for classification. So if you choose those data points and then ask the transcriber for transcription for just these data points, this kind of learning with queries called confidence-based. The other way is voting-based, in which choose the pattern that yields the greatest disagreement among the k-component classifiers. And okay, the another way of classifying learning with queries is sequential-based or batch-based. Sequential-based is you have, for every new training sample, you decide whether it needs transcription or it doesn't need transcription. The other way is batch-based mode, where we have a set of samples and we choose the best set or subset among this training set for which you need the transcription. Both has its own advantages and disadvantages. Note that such approaches tend to ignore priors and attempt to focus on patterns near the decision boundary surface. So this is very important for learning with queries, that attempts to focus patterns near the decision boundary surface. It's somewhat similar to SVMs. Did you talk about SVMs, RVMs? Okay. It's somewhat similar to SVMs and RVMs, where the important the classifier tries to give importance to the actual decision data points near the decision boundary surface. The cost of collecting and truth marking large amounts of data is almost always prohibitively high, and hence strategies to intelligently create training data are extremely important to any pattern recognition problem. So we're not going to deal much more with learning with queries, but this is quite an important field nowadays with so much of data out in the internet. Cross-validation. This is another, this is probably one of the most important fields. You anyway come across this when you have to finish your dissertation or whatever project you're doing. At the end, you will have to come to this cross-validation to show statistically or meaningful results. So in simple validation, we randomly split the set of labeled training data into a training set and a held-out set. Held-out set is either can be used for evaluation or for development. Did he talk about what development set is, what evaluation set is before? No? So when you have a large, when you have given a data set, you split this into typically three parts. One is the training set, then development set, and then the evaluation set. The training set, this needs no explanation. You know what it is. So it just trained data, the models you have. And development set is typically used for tuning. You might want to know, assume you are using a DMM for classification or a HMM for classification. So you need to know how many states you want to use, how many mixtures you want to use. It's not allowed to use the actual test set to do this tuning, because that's cheating. So you take a development set and do all this tuning parameters. So you use this development test set to find the ideal number of mixtures, the number of states, and then the actual evaluation is done on the evaluation set. So now the held-out set, which is typically part of training set, you split this training set into the actual training data and held-out set. The held-out set is used to estimate the generalization error. One of the common way of doing this cross-validation or testing is M-fold cross-validation. The training set is divided into N by M disjoint sets, where N is the total number of patterns and M is set heuristically. The classifier is trained M times, each time with a different held-out set as a validation set. The estimated performance is the mean of these M error rates. So the overall basic idea is, assume you have 100 samples for training. What you do is you will divide it into, say, about 5 sets of 20 samples each. For each test, you will take one of these sets, that is the 20 samples, as the test set, and the remaining 80 as the training. So you'll take the initial first 20 and the rest 80 as the split. That is the first 20 for testing, the remaining 80 for training. And then do one testing. And then take the second train, the second set, that is from 21st sample to 40 samples. So this set as the test set and the remaining as the training set. And do this evaluation. So you go on, keep doing this, and finally you've got 5 test results, and you take the mean of all these. So this is M-fold cross-validation. What we did now is 5-fold cross-validation. Such techniques can be applied to any learning algorithm. Key parameters such as model size or complexity can be optimized based on M-fold cross-validation mean error rate. So this is one way of finding, setting the number of mixtures, and you can do tuning using this. Now, another method that sometimes uses anti-cross validation, instead of taking the mean of the M error rates, what we do is we take the best classifier, adjusting parameters until the first local maximum is observed. So we just find, take the best partition and assume that to be the correct classifier and the best test place. Jackknife and bootstrapping. Methods closely related to cross-validation are the jackknife and bootstrap estimation procedures. Jackknife, train the classifier n separate times, each time deleting a single point, test on the single deleted point. The jackknife estimate of the accuracy is the mean of these leave-one-out accuracies. Unfortunately, complexity is very high. Can you see the, do you understand what jackknife is? That is, you take one sample, delete that from the full data set, train on the remaining samples, and test on the single data set, single point. Do this for every single point, and then average all these out. Do you see a comparison between jackknife and cross-fold validation? Perfect, that's right, yeah. So, jackknife is just a special case of what N-fold cross-validation is. We just take MSN. That is, we have N data sets. In each data set, one acts as test, and the rest of them acts as train. So, just same as M4 cross-validation where MSN. The other way is bootstrap, where we have B classifiers, each with a different bootstrap data set, and test on the other bootstrap data sets. The bootstrap estimate of the classifier accuracy is the mean of these bootstrap accuracies. So, do you remember again what bootstrap is? That we talked at the beginning of this class. No? Bootstrap is, so if you have say 20 samples of heights, you keep sampling this data set again and again, sampling with replacement. So do it once to get another set of 20 samples. This will be the first bootstrap set. You can do the same thing again and again to get several bootstrap sets. Each will be a separate training data set. So if you don't have that much data, if you just, instead of say in jackknife or M4 cross validation where we had 100 samples and we can split it into 5 sets of 20 samples each. If we can't do that, assume to start with we just had only 20 samples. So in that case we can use bootstrap to get those 5 sets. We can start off with just one data set with 20 samples and get 5 data sets with 20 samples each using bootstrap, and do exactly similar to what you did with jackknife or M4 cross-validation. ML-based model comparison. Now, assume I'm giving you an example with data points which are almost on a straight line. That is, I've got point here, which is say 1, value is 1, y at x equals 1, y is 1. X is 2, y is 3. X is 3, y is 5. What do you think the actual model is? What would you guess? A straight line? 1, 3, 5. 1, 3, 5, 7? Why? I got at successive time instance, the values are 1, 3, 5 and 7. What is the best model, predictive model? What is the next? What will be the next sample? 1, 3, 5, 7, filling the blanks. 9. Why did he say that? Yeah, so in this case you fit a straight line. That seemed to be the simplest model. You are in fact using Occam's razor. You're fitting the simplest model. I can as well fit this with, say, a 10th order polynomial. I can vary the parameters, I can find the coefficients of this polynomial to fit these samples, but you'll get a different prediction. So why should you prefer the straight line over this polynomial, 10th order polynomial? Yeah, right, that's Occam's razor, simpler. So intuitively that's what we would want to do. So in model comparison, if I give you two models, say one is this linear model, the straight line, and the second one is this polynomial model, you want to compare these two models and choose between these. In ML-based model comparison, in fact, if you use this in this specific example, ML won't be able to decide which is better. ML, for that we will need Bayesian model comparison, which we'll probably see in the next class. In ML-based model comparison, maximum likelihood model comparison is a direct generalization of ML parameter estimation process. We can guess what it's going to be, right? So you just find the maximum likelihood from model 1 and from model 2, whichever is higher, just choose that. So let HI belong to H, capital H, represent the candidate hypothesis or model, and let D represent the training data. What I should confuse here is H is a set of all models. It's not parameters, it's models. That is, you can have 10th order polynomial, you can have second order polynomial, you can have a straight line, you can have a logarithmic model. All these would be in H. These are not the parameters. This is the space of all models. And HA is just one of those models. In our case, H1 is a straight line, a linear model. H2 is a 10th order polynomial. Let HI belong to H, represent the candidate hypothesis or model, and let D represent the training data. The posterior probability, if any given model is of any given model, we know this, P of HI given the data D is using Bayes' rule, we can expand it this way. P of D given HI multiplied by P of HI over P of D. And as usual, we can neglect this P of P over D, P of D. So it's just proportional to P of D given HI multiplied by P of HI. Now, P of HI is the prior. If, in our case, what we did, when you guessed, the next sample that we would get is 9. You assumed you are giving a prior for the linear model. So P of H1 we gave very high prior, and P of H2, which is the 10th order polynomial, we gave very, very small prior. But if you didn't have that prior, we are just going to have the likelihood. So in that case, for both the models, whether it's linear or 10th order polynomial, both would have the same likelihood in the specific case. So we won't be able to decide with that. So the first factor is the evidence for HI, P of D given HI, while the second factor is a subjective prior for the space of hypothesis. If we neglect the second term, we have a maximum likelihood situation. In ML model comparison, we find the ML parameters for each of the candidate models, calculate the resulting likelihoods, and select the model with the largest such likelihood. This is somewhat similar to likelihood ratio approach. So we just find the ratio of P of D given HI over P of D given H1 over P of D given H2. This is the likelihood ratio. And then choose whichever is highest. We can also use this formulation to compare models such as HMM models directly by applying the means of one model to other model. This is often a convenient way to compute similarities without reverting back to the original training data set. So this is just one example of other ways this model comparison can be used. Especially in speech, mean is considered very important. Mean of GMNs is considered very important for classifying different kinds of speech or even speakers. So we can just compare directly the means, the HMM parameters, the means, and decide which one is closest, which model is closest. Today I will just start on Bayesian model comparison, but I don't want to go deep into it. It's better to start off fresh in the next class. If you go back here, we neglected priors in maximum likelihood approach. In Bayesian approach, you might think you would include this and this would become Bayesian. But that's not what we are going to do. We are going to neglect P of HI even here. Yes, if you actually know what the priors are, it's very useful, and we don't need to actually go through what we are going to go through next class. But P of HI is usually subjective. When we said, linear is probably simplest, so that's what we'll give high priority or high prior. We imposed our subjectivity on it. But even without that, Bayesian analysis can help us decide on the simpler model to use automatically. That's by doing this integration. So it's still, we are going to deal with this P of D given HI, this evidence. But we are going to decompose this using the parameters and then somehow incorporate the idea of Occam's razor into it. The way we do it is, if we take, say, the linear model and the 10th order polynomial for the example that we took, obviously the 10th order polynomial, the space of 10th order polynomial, can explain much more of data than what a linear model can do. Do you agree? Right? Because it's got lot more parameters, much more complex model. So it's going to explain lot more kinds of data than what a linear model can do. So if you take the probability that a linear model is generated, linear data is generated from a linear model, the probability is going to be much higher compared to the probability that a linear model is generated from a more complex 10th order polynomial. Right? You agree? The 10th order polynomial also includes the linear model as a special case. But it also explains so much more. It can see so much more different kinds of dynamics. But if I give you a data which is linear, it's a simple linear model. So in that case, the probability that it arose from a linear model is going to be much higher than the probability that it arose from a 10th order polynomial. That's what the Bayesian model is going to use. But I'll get into this next class. So that's it for today. Any questions?